Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. SDPB's Kevin Wooster is a journalist, a blogger, and an outdoorsman. You can find him in the fields and streams of South Dakota. You can find his work on our website at sdpb.org/Wooster. And every Thursday, you can find him right here on In the Moment. Welcome, Kevin.
It's good to be back, Lori.
It is always nice to talk with you. And the last time we talked, which has been 2 weeks now, we were face-to-face in the Black Hills Bureau, and we talked a little bit about Vietnam then. Last night at that same Black Hills Bureau, one of SDPB's screening of the Ken Burns film took place. You were there, right?
I was. I got there for the second screening. They had a couple, and as I got there, the first screening had just finished, and people were sitting around chatting, and a buddy of mine that's about my age that was in Vietnam with the Air Force and did a number of things, including forward observation in a small plane, which to me sounds like a really bad idea. You know, to be flying around observing things in a small plane over Vietnam,
right,
when there's hostiles in the jungle.
What could go wrong?
Yeah. What could go wrong there, yeah. And afterwards, he was leaving, and I caught him on the sidewalk, and I said, "What'd you think?" And he talked a little bit about this and that, and then he just wept. Mm-hmm. And he said it brought back so much, and it means so much to me. He said, "Of course, it's a great film, but it really dug deep down into things." And he also said that, you know, he had a son serving, and I can't remember if he's still over or had been in Afghanistan, but he said, and these kinds of films make me know for sure that my son won't have to wait 50 years to look back for people to understand and to talk about these things.
Wow. So, that's a significant thought that I don't think we've really explored on this program yet. Maybe people are exploring it in person during the screenings, but this generation of Vietnam veterans did so much. I think it's impossible to overstate what they did for the next generation of veterans because of their experience.
Yeah, yeah. They were doing it last night there. And as you know well, there was a crew there. When people wanted to talk about it, they did talk a little bit, and they got that. So I'm looking forward to seeing some of those. And another buddy of mine that's, again, about my age, maybe a year or two older, was a Marine. And He didn't say much, sat during the film. He kept saying, "Thank you for being here. Thank you for being here." And midway through, in one of these brutal scenes of the Marines just getting hammered and living in, you know, with mortars and living in these mud trenches where they were actually had their feet in water all the time. They show in there one of the clips of a Marine actually, I think he was writing a letter or reading a letter, and his feet were in water because that's where he had to be. And all the gentlemen behind me did was reach up at one point and touch my shoulder and lean forward and say, "I was there."
Mm-hmm.
And that's all he said, and that's all he really needed to say. But he did need to say that, I think.
The last time that you and I talked, you talked about, you know, not going and feeling, you know, grateful that that was your opportunity to not go. As you watched the screening and saw some of those experiences and were, you know, reached out to by, you know, people you knew and complete strangers saying, "Yeah, that's my experience." You know, what was that moment like for you as you watched some of the things that maybe you've seen before, maybe you hadn't really processed before?
Well, some of them I hadn't seen for a while, and, you know, the film goes back to the very beginning when, again, so often in these terrible things that develop from sort of a misunderstanding, you know, and it talks about how the little skirmish between the South Vietnamese, the little Navy they had, and the North Vietnamese Navy, and how we were kind of backed off with our destroyers staying away from that, but then things just one person in one boat made a bad decision and attacked an American boat, apparently, and then things went on, and then there was a misunderstanding of some translation on an intercepted message from the North Vietnamese that seemed to indicate maybe they were going to attack us, when actually I think what they were doing was preparing in case the South Vietnamese boats attacked them again. And that began an escalation. I mean, and certainly that wasn't the only thing, but that's the way things take off, and pretty soon we have what we had, and I sat there feeling both guilty and relieved, and I always feel that way, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm always straightforward about with Vietnam vets that I didn't serve. I had a you know, a good draft number, a good, sorry to say it that way, I guess, that some of my friends didn't get. And then it was going downhill, and I had, you know, when I didn't start college right away, so I was vulnerable. There was a lot of things going on, and I just was lucky to get a high draft number. And then by the time I went to college and got that deferment, it was pretty much a done deal, and we were heading towards that moment with the helicopters on the roof of the embassy.
This whole summer, we've been talking to Vietnam veterans and other people, protesters, people who are against the war. It has been quite a summer for me emotionally. Have you felt that yourself as you sort of have been drawn into more conversations than you might normally be as we get ready for this documentary event?
Very much so. And I was so powerfully opposed to the war at the point when I, back in those years, that I hated the idea that maybe I would be called upon, you know, and something that seemed at that point anyway to not make any sense by the late 60s, by the time Tet was over, by the time we'd seen the way things were going. And those feelings have softened and kind of dissipated over the years. And, of course, that brings it all back. But with it is more of a sense of historical perspective and more maturity and a great deal more of appreciation for what those people who went sacrificed. And the lack of appreciation that they have sometimes been shown over the years. So.
You and I both spent some time writing about our fathers recently. I was reading your blog, and you were talking about your dad. I was writing my blog yesterday after we spoke on this program with Frank Palmersheim and Anne Dunham about their anti-war activities during the Vietnam War. And immediately after they left, I started thinking, what would my dad, who served in Vietnam, who believed everyone should serve their country, what would he have to say about this? And I wanted to ask him.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about him. Your piece on your father, I have to read it after work, not during work, because it's so emotional for me. So tell me a little bit about why you're still writing about your dad all these years later.
Well, I just can't get it right. My wife said to me after she read it, that this is the closest you've ever come, because she knows how frustrated I've been at not being able to tell what it meant to me to lose my dad at 16, and at a time when I was a lost kid anyway. I dropped out of school, and I was a mess, and I was, I caused him all kinds of heartache and grief, and that's the way he died, was with me in that mess. And so there was obviously a lot of guilt for me, and the questions all through the years as you develop as a human being that you want to turn. And I saw other people turn to their fathers. As I turned to my mother, obviously, with the mother questions, but there are certain questions a guy has to ask his dad, and a girl too, you know, that they're just different frameworks there. And always, what would my dad think? What would he have thought about this election? What would he have thought about this invasion? What would he have thought about this? What would he have thought about the decision that I'm making? And the fact that I never got to say goodbye to him, because I didn't at that point have the courage to go see him in the hospital the last 2 weeks, that always left another thing. So I've been writing that story in one way or another, not to my satisfaction, for 50 years. And she said to me, you know, you've come pretty close here, haven't you? And I said, I think I have. And she said, you know, you wouldn't have come close working for the Journal or working for the Argus or working for Kellogg, because you wouldn't have had the time to invest in it. They wouldn't have had, and she's right. I think that's one of the great things, what I'm doing now for you guys. It gives me time to do what I love to do in the way I haven't been able to always do it before. Mm-hmm. And nowhere is that more important than when you tell a story that you and I know is so personal.
Right.
And is so much of an essence of who we are now.
And Hattie, I have two questions for you. One is really the process of it for you, and the other is the process of releasing it and sharing it with all those readers, and in this case, listeners. So let's first talk about your process. Is there a healing in the writing for you, or is the writing, suffering for you?
I think there's a little suffering, you know, because it brings back. And what part of what initiated this was, I was actually down at the Billy Sutton announcement, and I was driving back, and for some reason I was driving through the countryside where a friend of mine used to work as a soil conservation guy, and thinking about him. And he was one of my lifelong friends. He's still with me, a lifelong friend. And he came over the night my dad died, and like guys do, he didn't say anything. I was 16, he was 17. He said, "You want to ride around?" And we just rode around all night, and we never mentioned my dad. Talked about everything but my dad. And I didn't know what to say at 16. He didn't know what to ask, but he was there for me.
Right.
And so I started thinking about him, and I started to cry as I was driving down the road, thinking that my friend showed up for me that night.
Yeah.
And you know, I had to pull over. And he didn't know what to say, but he knew he had to be there for me. And so that started kind of initiated this process going through, and I kept coming back to it. And I said, I got to go back to this, because I remembered not going to see my dad. I remember how guilty I was about that. And I remember not even going to his funeral because I couldn't go. Mm-hmm. And I got permission to do that from my older brother, Jim, who had kind of taken over the reins of the family. But you can imagine what people in a small town thought, because everybody noticed the kid who doesn't go to school isn't at his dad's funeral either. And, oh, by the way, he didn't go see him for 2 weeks in the hospital. So, you know, that's not a Vietnam wait. That's not, although one of my Marine friends says, oh, it's pretty close. I don't consider that a Vietnam wait. But so all of this kind of came together when you're looking back at Vietnam, at my life and the way I was then and the things I was going through. And I think that all kind of combined, converged to bring this piece out of me.
Kevin, I'm kind of wrecked right now emotionally, so so thanks for that. For everybody else who wants to join us on this journey, go online to sdpb.org/Wooster and read this incredible piece for yourself, and come to the screenings. You can find them at sdpb.org/Vietnam. Kevin, I just want to say personally thank you so much for sharing this story with me and with all of us, because that's a tremendous gift, and I'm glad that we're working together.
My pleasure, Lori. Me too.
And we'll see you next time.
Okay.